Well, a study just published in the Journal of Behavioral Addictions found that among college students, men spend nearly 8 hours a day on their cell phones, while women spend 10. Here to tell us more is Dr. James Roberts, author of the study. He's a marketing professor at Baylor University's Hankamer School of Business in Waco, Texas. Welcome.
Thank you for having me, Anne. I look forward to talking to you.
Well, thanks for joining us today. Your study was published in the Journal of Behavioral Addictions. Can you give us some examples of what a behavioral addiction is?
You bet. In addition to the subject at hand here, which was technology addiction, or more specifically, cell phone addiction, behavioral addiction could be anything, any kind of behavior that we've really lost control over. So it's a behavior that we do despite the negative consequences caused by that. And so it's even when good things can go bad, if you will, just like my study here with cell phones, and that, you know, cell phones play a very positive role in a lot of aspects of our lives. But when they start to dominate your life, when you lose control, that's the key word. We're addicted to something when we lose control and continue to perform that behavior despite its negative consequences. So back to your original question, something like even something that could be on the surface good, exercise, if we do it too much to the point where we crowd out our friends or other activities, we do it to the point where it gets in the way of our job, or we lose too much weight, I mean, if that's possible for any of us. But still, you know, so it could be gambling, eating's a little bit different, exercise. Yeah, any kind of behavior where we lose control despite the negative consequences coming from that excessive behavior can be considered a behavioral addiction.
So what prompted you to look into cell phone use specifically?
All right, well, how much time do you have? Well, actually, I have done research. I've been at Baylor University for about 24 years, and for 20 years now, I've been studying what we could call, I call compulsive buying, but a lot of people call it shopping addiction. So I've looked at, for years, what I consider or what I call the dark side of consumer behavior. So I've been doing research for years on shopping addiction, materialism, credit card abuse, self-control or lack thereof, and so kind of the dark side of consumer behavior. So this was a natural extension. Moving into technology, or specifically cell phone addiction, was kind of a natural evolution of my research. So I was still looking at behaviors that were addictive, right? Ones that we did, like shopping, where we know the devastation that can be caused by a compulsive or addicted shopper, you know, the financial ruin, the fights, and oftentimes divorce that occurs from overshopping and overspending. We're seeing, and that was just a natural evolution to say, well, I saw so many people, and, you know, I think what really first caught my eye was with my daughters, and when we, you know, finally made the decision when they were in about sixth grade, and I was a holdout, you know, I was kind of against it at the time, to give them a cell phone for safety purposes, right? They're going to be traveling with their sports teams and things, and we wanted to make sure we could keep track of them. But I saw how quickly, and not only did they acclimate to the cell phone, but where the cell phone started to take over a lot of their life. And so I said, wow, that's amazing. And, you know, then I'd look and watch people, you know, driving in their car, not just talking, but texting on the phone. And, you know, I started thinking about, this is really a behavior where for a large group of people, we've lost control. They've lost their ability to control their cell phone use. You know, think about the fights we have with our children over their excessive cell phone use, or that we have with our spouses. Think about, you know, driving and texting and driving and talking and driving. So kind of this move to this type of addiction, although it's different than shopping behavior, it has that commonality that it's all about behavioral addiction, things that we really can't control, behaviors that we can't control that have a negative influence on our life.
Mm-hmm. Can you describe the study a little bit and then describe the basic gist of your findings?
You bet. It was really a very simple study. What we wanted to look at was, a lot of people were talking about, you know, people being attached to this. That's a kind of a kind way of saying it. And there's varying degrees attached to their cell phone. People were throwing out the word addicted to their cell phone. And so we're finding, you know, varying results about the types of people who are more or less likely to be addicted to their cell phone. But what we didn't know is what were the types of activities. It wasn't that people aren't addicted to their cell phone. They're addicted to uses on their activities that are performed on their cell phone. So we really answered a kind of a call in the literature, or kind of a hole that we addressed, the hole in the literature that looked at, okay, you're not addicted to your cell phone. You're addicted to particular activities on your cell phone. So our study's intent was to see which activities were what we call the stickiest, which were the activities that kept us coming back to our cell phones. And so what we did, quite simply, is we took a sample of 164 college students, both men and women, because that was an important part of our study, too, was we didn't want to look at just which activities were more or less closely associated with cell phone addiction, but we wanted to know if these activities differed between men and women. And so we took a sample of 164, both men and women, about half and half approximately, male and female college students, and we asked them, we had a list. It was our web survey, you know, everything's on the web now and electronic, or digital. And so we asked them, they logged on, and we asked them to tell us how much time they spent on each of 24 different cell phone activities. And so we had carefully, you know, we, of course, some of them are obvious, right? How much time they spend making calls, texting, surfing the internet, on Facebook, Instagram, taking pictures, even banking, all, you know, I mean, just so many different things that we do, shopping, of course, on the cell phones. We listed the ones that, you know, pretty much, okay, there's not much else we can think of. And we asked them to tell us how many minutes per day they spent on each of these activities. But in addition to that, we also asked them to answer some questions about their attitudes towards cell phone. Really, it was our cell phone addiction scale. And then we also, of course, asked them some questions about their age and their gender. And we threw it all together, and what did we find? We found out what I even found to be astounding, that women, college females, in this sample, it's not everybody, it may differ, but this love of technology and attachment to cell phones and obsession with technology is a near universal, and particularly in young people. But what we found was, astoundingly, that women spent, as you mentioned at the start of the broadcast, 10 hours a day on various activities on their cell phone, and men were, you know, about 7.5 hours a day. So we are attached, young people are attached, and using their cell phone for a variety of different activities.
Well, that's amazing, considering you're really only awake for about 16 hours.
And that's a good point. And of course, certainly, I'm always the first to question any research result, any study's research result. And I think partial explanation is that they're spending that kind of time, but could it vary a little bit? And to be honest with you, if someone came out and it wouldn't happen and said, oh, it's really sure only be 8 hours, you know what I'd say? That's still a lot of time on a cell phone, you know, even if we're off by a few hours. But also, it's something called multitasking. And see, that's the generation. Not only does this generation of young people love technology, but they're also in love with multitasking. So a lot of these activities, you know, where they're using surfing YouTube or Instagram or Pinterest or whatever other activities that we recorded, they're doing that while they're doing other things. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for college students, a lot of them are doing that while they should be studying.
Exactly. If you just joined us, we're speaking with Dr. James Roberts. He's a marketing professor at Baylor University's Hankamer School of Business in Waco, Texas, and he's talking with us about cell phone use and addiction. Dr. Roberts, so I know it's not the actual use of the phone, but the things you're doing on the phone, but what are some of these activities? What do they do to the brain to make the usage so addictive and so pleasurable?
Well, there's a number of things going on. That's a good question. There's got to be anything, and that's why the real argument about behaviors as actually being addictive. You know, some people still push back a little bit with that. Can you really be addicted to a behavior like you are a substance like alcohol or drugs? And the answer to it is it's a different process, but yes, any activity that produces pleasure in that kind of pleasure center of our brain, dopamine, epinephrine, serotonin, can become addictive. And so cell phones are kind of uniquely positioned for a number of reasons to be potentially addictive to young people. Again, like I mentioned earlier, was first that young people have always historically had a fascination with technology. So they want to be the first on the block, and they love technology, and it's very much a part of who they are. And then the second is that the cell phone has kind of emerged from the pack as the leading technology. You know, it's the kind of the it technology. You know, and not that many years ago, kids were still schlepping around laptops, and, you know, we had even some of them, you know, as archaic as this might sound, had desktops. You know, now pretty much everything they do is they have a laptop that they leave at home for heavy typing and assignments that aren't probably amenable to the cell phone, but everything else is on the cell phone. And so we've got this device, these cell phones that are highly portable, right? They fit in our back pocket, and they're designed. And I know Apple went through a lot of soul searching and hair pulling to decide on how big they wanted to go, you know, to keep up with their competition, but also be able to still fit in that back pocket or easily into the purse of a female. And so they're portable, kids love them, and they're becoming so multifunctional. I mean, I challenge you to think of something you can't do on your cell phone. I mean, you can take pictures, you can bank, you can shop, you can get a coupon. Well, you know, I mean, I get a kick out of the new uses we're finding every day. This isn't a new use, but one that I always get a kick out of is when in Sunday school or at church, you know, I'm still the old school, pull out the Bible and, you know, read what I need to read. And then I'll see the other people, you know, pulling out their cell phones and they've got their Bible on their cell phone. You know, so yeah, so it's just becoming that we can do, and the pictures that you can take. I know a lot of people, if they're like us, have dropped their other cameras, and I know my daughter, who's a college freshman, I have one who's a high school junior, has pretty much dropped and has never really known anything but their camera on their iPhone.
I know lots of folks like that too. Well, what are some implications for, I don't know, for a number of things when people use their cell phones this month? I'm thinking specifically of academic performance and just for their relationships with other people.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head both times there. The one thing from our study, and again, what kind of prompted the study, it was largely not only that, you know, we are really spending too much time or a lot of time, we'll let people decide on if it's too much time or not, with technology, particularly the cell phone. But from a professor's standpoint, we struggle with this issue every day because the research tells us pretty clearly that the more people use their cell phone, the lower their grade point average is. Hmm. So they're being distracted. And I can tell you where, as a professor, I'm on the front line, not as a researcher now, but as a teacher in the classroom, I'm on the front line because I see it every day. Teachers vary, but I have a very clear policy about cell phones are to be off and out of sight. You know, they're just too attractive. If they're off but in sight, that's just going to distract people. But yet, you know, of course, we catch people looking at their, you know, their phone. Possibly if we don't catch them looking at it, they're dreaming about it and, you know, worried about missing the last group email or text and things like that. So it's interrupting their classroom retention of material. They're kind of, in essence, checked out of the classroom because a lot of people, unlike me, a lot of professors may be allowing cell phones as long as they're not disruptive, but they always are in the classroom. So they're not getting the material or not present in the classroom. And then we know that the majority of them, when they study with their cell phone next to them. And so they're getting texts, they're getting, you know, warnings, they're getting Instagram notifications and things like that. So it's interrupting them on the other end as well as they study and prepare for exams or write papers or whatever. So, yeah, we've seen a real clear and strong relationship between time on the cell phone and performance, academic performance.
Huh. Well, the other thing I've thought about this is it works the reverse too, which is if someone is in a physical, you know, situation, say in a classroom, that situation is being altered by the inputs that they're receiving from outside that room.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? That
oh,
it's also
teachers.
Changing, you know, not that you might know it necessarily, but it's also changing what's happening among a group of people because they're receiving information from outside that, which never used to be the case.
Yeah, I mean, there are, you know, and some people argue that, you know, there's some value to cell phones in the classroom, you know, about doing just that, you know, gathering, you know, you come up and I've caught myself too, well, what is that again? And then someone will pull out their cell phone and answer the question for me. And so, you know, it can have a positive impact in very limited circumstances, you know, to bringing current information and bringing information, again, like you mentioned, that might not otherwise be shared. But largely, and so, you know, people are arguing that they're a fact of life, and so we need to do what we can to incorporate them in the classroom. I disagree with that wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. But there are people who are doing that. You know, my sense is that it's all about finding that kind of that sweet spot, that middle ground. I don't see cell phones as evil by any stretch. There are so much good that we've been able to accomplish through our cell phones, and that's what makes it. If they were all bad, well, then we'd outlaw them, and you know, no one would probably complain. But there are so many things that they do well that the real trick is not to, you know, is not to detox or go cold turkey, but to find some happy medium, and that's the hardest thing to do in anything. It's not like we can just quit eating and we'll be fine. We gotta eat to stay alive. So it's finding that middle ground in cell phone use that is the real trick here.
Good point. Well, what are your plans, if any, to study this further?
Yeah, we've got a lot going on. Right now, I've got another paper under review that looks at the different types of personalities that people have, and do some of these personality types prone or lead them to be more likely to be addicted to technology?
Oh, good. That was one of my other questions, because I was thinking that that could be the case, that certain personalities or people who have certain traits might be more prone to addictive use.
Oh, you bet there are, yeah. We know one of the interesting, just to tell you a little bit about the study, was we looked at and we found that just like with substance addictions, you know, drinking, smoking, drug taking, and things like that, impulsiveness plays a very important role in behavioral addictions like cell phone addiction as well.
That makes sense. Interesting. So you mentioned the turn of phrase, which I like, that you study the dark side of consumer behavior. Do you have any advice or suggestions if people think they're using their phones too much? What can they do?
I do. That's a question I would expect to get from anybody. I think it was my grandmother who used to say, it's not enough that you can bring up a problem, but you have to also offer a solution to that problem. And so I've always kind of followed that sage advice. And what I would say, like getting back to an earlier comment, I don't think it's real. I mean, really, cell phones have gotten to be so deeply ingrained in our everyday life that the idea of cold turkey or just completely, you know, going off the self, off grid, if you will, is not possible. What I suggest as far as cell phone use works is finding that kind of moderate ground, that kind of sweet spot. And so that requires, you know, and that's what makes it hard, because we're still going to use it, but we got to find out where can we cut back, you know, so we're controlling the technology rather than the technology controlling us. And so some of the simple things you can do, you know, you'll see so much in the literature about, you know, digital detox and just quitting. But you know what? Again, that's not realistic, and that probably leads to more problems, more anxiety, stress, irritability, and lost opportunities. That the really more realistic kind of approach to controlling our cell phone use would be things like setting boundaries. And what we've done, kind of concrete example, would be, and you know, not always successful, but what we've done is when our children were smaller, we had the rule that cell phones, well, when they were younger, it was off by 9 or 10 o'clock. And as they got a little older, it might be 11. So they're off, and they had to be off and out of sight when they went to sleep, or, you know, even at night so we could have family time. And they couldn't be turned back on until after they were ready for school. So that was just one way to try to, you know, help encourage them to be a little bit healthier. And, you know, adults can do the same thing. There's got to be boundaries, like try to have cell phone free meals. So when there's no opportunity for, you know, people, the worst thing to me still is talking to people when they have one eye down on their cell phone and the other eye on me. So I'd say cell phone free meals, boundaries, you know, times where you just certainly, and I don't want to overlook this because I know our talk is coming to an end, is, you know, boundaries like no cell phone use in the car. Under no circumstances should you be talking or texting on your phone. That's that not even just young people, but adults as well, that kind of multitasking myth that they're good enough that they can both drive and talk on a cell phone without doing damage to either. And the truth of the matter is, when you talk on the cell phone or, heaven forbid, text on a cell phone while driving, of course, your driving suffers. So yeah, set those boundaries that are first not only physically, you know, helping you be physically safer and keeping other people out of harm's way, but also things you can do to kind of improve the quality of your life, which is, you know, kind of having, again, cell phone or technology free meals, times together, sleep, because we know as a nation, particularly our young people, are chronically sleep deprived. And one of the purposes is because they, you know, their cell phone is the first thing that they, last thing they look at before they go to bed. Vast majority of young people sleep with their cell phone within 10 feet of their bed. And so it interrupts, and if they don't turn it off, it interrupts their sleep. So, yeah, there are a number of things you can do. I think it's unrealistic that, I don't think children, young people, maybe even adults today really have the choice of whether they're on the cell phone or not. If they have a circle of friends that they want to stay in contact with, I know with my daughters, if they were to, you know, to go cold turkey on the cell phone, they'd miss out on social opportunity after social opportunity. And as human beings, that's just not how we're wired.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Those are all really good ideas.
Thank you.
Anything else you want to add before we let you go?
I think everyone just needs to take a step back and really see and think deeply about what role technology, and in particular their cell phone, plays. And I'd say, let's cure all the world's ills here in one 15-minute conversation, I'd say let's start with the simplest one. Let's ask your listeners to put down their cell phones when they're in the car, put them in their purses, backpacks, or put them in the trunk if they have to, and that may be what we need to do at first. Let's just take a small step, and let's keep yourself and others safer by putting your cell phone away while you're driving your car.
Okay, we can do that. Well, thank you, Dr. Roberts, for your time tonight. We really appreciate it.
It was my pleasure, Ann. Thank you very much.